Welcome to this latest edition of the Delivery Profits, brought to you by the Delivery World together with Avico. We're so grateful for all of you out there who tune in regularly for this podcast. Without you, we're just a bunch of guys and gals talking to each other in a recording studio. I'm Peter Backman, and today, together with John Borzacchiello and our special guest, Matt Price, as usual, we'll talk about delivery in general and ways to make it accessible and profitable. And no doubt we'll get onto other topics too, as we try to get a deep understanding of the forces shaping this rapidly evolving sector. But before we get on to that, John, it's coming up for summer. What are your plans?
We are doing a staycation this year because we're having some building work done on the house. So we're going to take the children up to Scotland to show them. Harry, my youngest, just turned 7, is looking forward to seeing the Loch Ness Monster. So I don't know how we're delivering that one just yet, but it'll be good. And of course, you've been away to your annual pilgrimage to the States.
Yes, I was in St. Louis with my granddaughter and my son and daughter-in-law as well. And I got out to some fantastic countryside, which I've been to St. Louis several times before, but I had never realized how wonderful the river is, and the Mississippi. Going up and walking, absolutely fantastic.
Oh, I bet it was nice just to have the family. But knowing you, Mr. Batman, you did some work while you were over there, surely, because you couldn't go all the way to the States and relax.
No, but sometimes I think I never relax, but because I'm enjoying this so much, it's really good fun. But I think it's probably time to get the show on the road, don't
Definitely,
you?
Definitely, 100%.
So let me set the scene with some thoughts that I prepared earlier. The Merriam-Webster definition of delivery is the act or manner of delivering something. And Collins' dictionary says that delivery is the bringing of letters, parcels, or other goods to someone's house. Those definitions suggest that delivery is simple, transactional, and action-oriented. In other words, it gets something done. And sure, for letters and parcels, that's really good enough because they are, in a sense, dead, or perhaps it's better to say they are lifeless. They are in exactly the same condition whether they take a day or a week to deliver. But I'd argue that restaurant delivery is very different. A restaurant meal is changing constantly. It's cooling down, it gets mixed when in motion, and it's not the same if it has taken 5 minutes rather than, say, an hour to deliver. When we think of restaurant delivery, images spring to mind of a bustling kitchen, a rider or driver on his or her way, customers drumming their fingers in anticipation of the delivery. Expectation, excitement even. I guess what I'm saying is that restaurant delivery is full of life. And life is unpredictable. That means that a life force of delivery is, or according to the analysis, should be unpredictability. But building a business on unpredictability is very tricky, to say the least. And the skill of a restaurant delivery business can be seen as marrying that unpredictability with a formal business model. And that's not easy to do. John, do you have any thoughts on that?
Totally. So with the food delivery, Peter, it's about the relationships, isn't it? It's about passion. And let's take it right back to its first stage of a consumer getting a meal delivered. It normally starts with a farmer who has the passion to grow or to rear product. It has development chefs involved that create these bespoke, beautiful recipes that make the food, the chefs in the kitchen, onto the consumer ordering it direct or through a platform, to the driver delivering it to that door. There's a journey all the way through, and it's a delivery from that first point a seed is put into the ground to when it's sat on a table in someone's house. And we all work in the best industry there is in the world, and it's passion. And that's the key to the whole delivery model.
Great. Thank you. So that's very helpful. And I guess it's time to bring in our guest, Matt Price, the general manager of Uber Eats UK, Northern Ireland and Europe. That's quite a large area. He has a distinguished background. He's got an MBA from INSEAD. He's worked as a consultant with Deloitte. And for the past 7 years, he's been with Uber in Canada and now in Europe, where his responsibilities cover over 300 markets and over 63,000 restaurants and merchants. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you very much. Excited to be here.
As I said, you're covering some large market. Does that size faze you at all?
I'm really excited about what we do. As we're going to talk about here today, we only succeed when our partners succeed. And, you know, the passion that you spoke about, John, is something that I see every day. And I think we're doing something with them here really important in terms of getting consumers ultimately what they want. And I would argue what they want predictably, not unpredictably.
Good. So you've agreed with us. That's really good. And just for the benefit of listeners, I wrote my words without talking to Matt about this. So that's good. Is there anything you want to sort of take issue with what we've said so far? The scenery up the Mississippi or passion or whatever, anything.
I did go to Scotland recently. I did not see the Loch Ness Monster. Oh. So I wish you better luck than I had.
Don't tell my young smart, he will not be happy.
But take issue with, let's talk about predictability, because I think the platforms and the partnerships that are growing, that are winning, are ones that are fundamentally delivering a pretty magical experience in terms of, you know, consumers being able to go into an app and get a great breadth of selection predictably, affordable selection predictably, and ultimately get the food to the consumer predictably, reliably.
Right. And so do you see that as the job of Uber and the job of delivery companies in general? Is it at heart predictability, or is it at heart providing customer experience, or is it at heart satisfying shareholders?
At the heart, it is allowing consumers to find what they want at the touch of a button. And it is about partnership with merchants, with restaurants to help them grow and help them grow profitably.
Yes, because you're managing a whole network of people, isn't it? Riders, customers, restaurants. And that, I guess, is a real challenge for anybody.
Indeed. In the UK, we're in 330 markets covering 90% of the population. And as you said, 63,000 restaurants and merchants on our platform. And it's not just restaurants, it's also grocers.
Yeah.
The interesting bit is, Matt, well, we've had restaurateurs in before. There's always been a mixed message from them, and some of them didn't know where their business was going with regard to delivery. And through the COVID times, it was a huge, big piece for them. But it always comes back to the experience. And whether it's an experience of sitting in a restaurant with family or friends, or having a delivery meal at home with family or friends, or by yourself, it's creating that experience. And restaurateurs go absolutely out of their way. There's some of them that it's like unwrapping a gift. So you get your delivery dropped off, and the way it opens up in the boxes, when the food's there, the way the cutlery is with it, it's a whole experience. How does Uber add to that experience the restaurant's delivering?
I mean, maybe the first thing to say is that, you know, food delivery is here to stay. And one of the reasons for that is if you talk to restaurants, you know, by our numbers, 2/3 of them will tell you it helps them access new customers. About 1/3 will tell them actually it increases the frequency of their customers ordering from them. And that speaks to the fact that consumers fundamentally, their habits have changed following COVID. You know, they want to be able to stay at home and order in. And indeed, if you look at the data today, a lot of consumers, even in these difficult economic times, are choosing first to pull away from ordering out as opposed to ordering in. So I think the habits have fundamentally changed. And part of that is restaurants really leaning into this as a source of profitable growth.
That's interesting, because people say to me, people with not necessarily a long history of association with delivery, they may have only been doing it for 2 or 3 years, and they suggest that COVID created restaurant delivery. Now, I know it was growing rapidly beforehand, but I'm just wondering whether the pandemic made the industry bigger than it would have been, or just accelerated the growth, and we're now sort of, in a sense, catching up with where we would have been if there hadn't been COVID. What's your sense on that?
I think it's hard to say what the counterfactual would be, but I think what we know is that consumer habits have changed, and they've changed permanently. And that's one of the reasons that even in these difficult economic times, we continue to see delivery incredibly resilient. And as I say, you know, if consumers in a world where their pocketbooks are stretched need to think about how to save money, they're first choosing not to dine out. food delivery is still a fundamental part of their behavior.
Is that age related? In other words, is it younger people who are more in tune with ordering things for speedy delivery? And as they grow older, they just become a larger and larger share of the market? Or is it everybody or most people who have taken on this idea of delivery, rapid delivery, call it what you like?
I mean, I think everybody is probably a big statement, but I mean, we're seeing it across all segments of the population, growing quickly with young people, growing quickly with families. But it's certainly a habit, and it's a habit, I think, that is widespread. And in fact, I think the habit over time here will grow as more and more restaurants lean in and embrace this as a source of profitable growth. And, you know, something you mentioned before is, it's really easy to get started, right? You know, you kind of sign up, we send you a tablet, you upload your menu, you turn it on, and all of a sudden you have access to new consumers. But the restaurants that are really thriving in delivery, especially at the moment, are thinking pretty critically about how to evolve their operation to make delivery be complementary to the in-store experience. So they need to be thinking about things like, what items am I putting on my menu? How do I think about pricing and promotion and kind of bringing that together and marketing in a way that's allowing me to get in front of consumers efficiently? How do I think about packaging and sustainable packaging and making sure my costs are as optimized as possible? And how do I deliver a great experience in terms of getting the right items in the bag and making sure that the courier handoff is strong?
So you seem to be suggesting, and it seems from what I've seen seems to be true, that if you're a restaurant and you're doing delivery, you should be examining it critically and asking yourself, why am I doing this? What do I need to change in order to make it work for me? Rather than just being something that you add on to what you're doing and hope it works. Is that fair?
I mean, I think, you know, from talking to restaurateurs up and down the country, I think they know why they're doing it. I think the question is how to do it well and how to do it in a way that actually delivers against the growth aspirations of your business. And it's not easy. But I think that's also why, you know, for instance, we have people up and down the country partnering with restaurants every day to help them think through, how do I evolve my operation to integrate and ensure it's complementary with my in-store operation?
And are there other people, businesses, sectors involved in this? I mean, I'm thinking partly of the tech business, which sits behind the scenes and most people aren't aware that there's a whole infrastructure ecosystem of technology at work behind delivery. Or is it, as John was suggesting, packaging companies or, again, companies like Avico, who are making the whole delivery ecosystem work and working with restaurants to make it work? Are there sources of knowledge, information, pressure that are driving delivery other than the delivery operators such as Uber?
I mean, I'd say it's a wide ecosystem. As John said at the beginning, starts with the farmer. I think there's lots of people involved in creating that magical experience for the consumer. At the end of the day, our focus is very much partnering with the restaurants and, you know, innovating, using our technology, using our people to build on their behalf to make sure that ultimately the entire ecosystem comes together to deliver a great experience for the end consumer.
What makes Uber different to your competitors, the ones out there, the Deliveroos, the Just Eats? What's your USP that a consumer would come to you, and why would we partner with Uber compared to another platform?
Look, I truly believe we have the best tech and we have the best team. And on that basis, when it comes to restaurants, we're very focused on partnership, really listening to them and using that technology to innovate, to build the things they need to deliver against their goals. We can talk more about our ads platform. We could talk more about delivery-only kitchens. When it comes to consumers, there's a bunch of stuff we're doing there to create a magical experience. One of the things that I'm really excited about and I think makes us different is our membership program, Uber One. And that also leverages our rides business, where for $5.99 a month in the UK, you get free delivery, discounts on food, discounts on rides, and a host of other benefits. I think that's very differentiating and something that, you know, consumers are really excited about. We've well eclipsed 1 million members on that program.
Fantastic. It's great numbers, isn't it, mm-hmm. when you look at it like that? And one question I have got to ask you, otherwise I'm going to get in trouble next time I see you, is data. Data is a massive part of your business, but it's also a huge part of a restaurateur's business. When a consumer orders through a platform, the data remains with the platform, whichever one that one is. We've had restaurateurs on this show, on this podcast, that have said, if we had that data, we could then work to get repeat business. We could offer them special discounts. But the data remains with a platform, doesn't it? Is there any opportunity for a restaurateur to work with you to get the data of the people that are buying? So there is a way to get repeat from them rather than a platform owning it.
I mean, I'd say we're leveraging data to help those businesses grow. So let me give you two examples, both of which leverage data and both of which are highly beneficial to restaurants, to merchants. One, you know, we have something called Uber Eats Manager, where a restaurant goes in, they can actually see all of the eyeballs that hit their menu in our app. They can see the conversion rates at all the different stages. They can work with us to put promotions and ways to target different behaviors at different stages of that funnel, as one example. At the same time, remember, you know, delivering a magical experience also requires to make sure your food is getting there with the items the consumers ordered, it's getting there on time. And there's lots of data we have and lots of data we share as to how to optimize that part of the experience well to make sure that the consumer is a great experience, they come back again. So data, very, very important. It underlies, you know, the technology that's being built across all sectors, but also something that we're certainly leveraging to benefit the merchant and working with them to improve the customer experience.
Can I change the tone or the nature of what we're talking about? Because we've covered some very important topics, and I might want to come back to the data question later on if we've got time. But what I'm also interested in, and given your international expertise and knowledge, are there differences between countries that you have noted? And are they significant? What sort are they? You know, it's a sort of open question, really.
I mean, maybe let me start on the similarities, which is, again, habits have changed. Consumers fundamentally want to get what they want at a touch of a button. And that's not just food delivery. That's across a lot of different sectors. But that is true of food delivery. And that might be the evening meal. That might be the breakfast after a night out. I think is kind of a universal truth at the moment across lots of countries in the world that I have been exposed to. You know, are there differences? Yes. Some cuisines more popular than others in certain countries. One of the things that I'm also seeing at the moment is some countries are ahead of others in terms of embracing their own channel of delivery, which means them building their own app or their own website where consumers go and order. And then on the back end, Uber Eats through a product called Uber Direct will actually do the delivery. So it's white label last mile delivery service. The biggest global brands are very much leaning into that. It's a way for them to have a direct relationship with their consumer. I think in some countries, we're seeing earlier adoption of smaller restaurants getting into that. And that's something we're really excited to partner with, in all countries of the world that we operate that service, including here in the UK.
And would you put these differences that you've pointed up to cultural differences, business cultural differences, or just the activity of delivery companies and others in the market? In other words, what if anything is driving these changes, or are they just sort of natural outgrowths of how things happen?
I don't know that I have a great answer to what exactly is driving what. What I can tell you is we have teams on the ground in most of the countries that you're thinking about, keen to partner with those restaurants and make this happen, to pull it forward and ultimately allow them to grow a different channel to reach the end consumer.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, that different channel, because it's something that we've talked about before. And that is that until delivery came along, restaurants, we knew what they were. They were either a full service restaurant or a quick service restaurant, and maybe they were a pub in the UK. And we all knew that. We've now got this new channel that's come along, which was an outgrowth of those markets, but it now seems to be developing a life of its own with the technology that we talked about, with the data that's coming out of it, with the emergence of companies like Uber in the market. So are we creating something new? In other words, we come back here in 10 years' time and we say, well, there's restaurants and there's delivery. Or are they destined to be hand in hand? I mean, I know you probably don't have the definitive answer, but what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think at the end of the day, the way that we're creating magic for consumers up and down the country is the delivery platforms working with the restaurants, you know, to get the food and the passion that you talk about, you know, packaged up and delivered. I think it requires both parties, and there's lots of ways to do this. There's lots of ways to grow. And you know, just to elaborate a bit on that, the thing you probably often think about is, you know, for instance, the Uber Eats marketplace business where a restaurant's available in the app. But let's keep in mind, you know, restaurants can also join our app, but do their own delivery, as in have their own couriers making the delivery. And as I said before, consumers can get the restaurant through the restaurant's own app, and we will do the delivery. So, I mean, one thing you should take away from this is there's no one size fits all. We are intently listening to our partners in terms of how they want to grow. Lots of research on the consumers, and we are continually using our technology to innovate and build the solutions that ultimately will allow consumers to get what they want effortlessly.
Yeah. With regard to Uber, Matt, whereabouts are you guys globally and in the UK with regard to positioning? Are you number 1, 2, 3, 4? And what is your ambition, I guess, as well for the next 3 to 5 years?
So, I mean, let me talk about the UK, given that is the business that I run. I'm excited to say in the UK, because of that focus on partnership, because of Uber One, you know, we are outgrowing the category. We are a solid number 2 in the UK, but growing quickly. As I say, you know, focused on having and building the best tech and the best team, I'm pretty confident that's going to continue.
It's great to be that challenger brand, isn't it? Because again, the company I work for, we're a challenger brand. We're not the number one. But actually, to be that challenger brand, you can see what the number one's doing. And like you say, you've got the partnerships, you've got the people. And that's the important thing, isn't it? The people.
The important thing is to have the best technology, the best team, and at the end of the day, to keep your eye on serving partners. We only succeed when restaurants succeed. And if we stay focused on that, listening to restaurants, innovating for restaurants, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, we will be number one.
And then there's the whole global perspective as well. So globally, there are Uber is in, it's certainly in the top 3 with Meituan, DoorDash, Uber, and substantially ahead of the rest of the market in terms of size. So that means that I'm assuming you've got more investment, you've got more knowledge than most of the companies that you compete with in most of the markets. Do you notice that, or do you have to learn about each market anew?
I mean, we're doing really well as a global business. In the last quarter, we were up 17% year on year on a constant currency basis. The business is growing really well. The delivery category is resilient. Every country has its unique nuances, but that's why we have teams on the ground in every country we operate, making sure we understand the country, what's going on, and again, partnering with restaurants to help them grow in the ways that they want to grow.
And you say we're talking about growth and your long-term strategy is, if we look at London, and we're not looking at food anymore, we're going to look at delivery of people. Everyone used to get a black cab or get the underground. Now people get Ubers. It's not, I'm going to grab a taxi. It's, I'm going to grab an Uber. Is that your ambition with the food as well, to get to that point where people are going to grab an Uber food rather than just grab a takeaway? Is that where you want to get to? Have you got that real long-term ambition?
I mean, at the end of the day, I want to make sure that when people come into our app, they have brilliant selection and they can get what they want effortlessly. I think if we keep focused on doing that, that is certainly the direction we will head. But look, our focus is very much on listening to and serving customers today.
Can we just make a little break here and then we'll come back to chatting to Matt? But If you're enjoying this show, please consider supporting us by leaving a 5-star rating on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts. Your ratings and reviews mean the world to us and help more people discover our content. Plus, it's the best way to show your appreciation for the hard work the Delivery World, the Avico team, and our fabulous guests put into each and every episode. So go ahead, hit that 5-star button. There are full instructions in the show notes. And let's continue with today's fantastic episode. Matt, you previously mentioned delivery kitchens. I think you used a slightly different terminology. I hear an awful lot, particularly from my American contacts, that that sector is not what it was, that it's in decline, that it's collapsing. That's not my perception, but what's yours?
I mean, my perception is there's lots of restaurants out there for whom delivery-only kitchens is a big and successful part of their strategy. It's not for every restaurant, but I think restaurants that have, you know, a pretty high-margin product, restaurants that have high volume, and restaurants that are strong operators can work with delivery-only kitchens, dark kitchens, as some people might call them, to help them optimize their delivery operation. And so we, for instance, have partnerships with multiple delivery-only kitchen networks. We try to create a turnkey solution for the restaurant, but it can work, and it can work profitably.
But you don't run your own kitchens. That's up to the specialist kitchen owner, operator.
Indeed. We work through partnerships.
Right.
With regard to businesses that are set up for delivery takeaway only. We went on tour, didn't we, Peter, up to Manchester and did a piece with Burgerism and their owner. And their big thing is they're not a restaurant. They only do delivery. So they, again, are a burger concept that only do delivery. The same as, I guess, Domino's were and Papa John's back in the day. Do you see more of these businesses happening, Matt? And not just a restaurant for delivery, but a Burgerism to go out and actually embrace a city like they have in Manchester in different areas of the UK?
I will firstly say we're very proud to partner with Burgerism. They've been hugely successful in what they do. And I think the short answer to your question is yes. As delivery becomes more and more prominent, there's more opportunity for, you know, brands to innovate and think about it in different ways. Burgerism is a great example that I know many people are looking at and thinking about how can we do something like what they've done in terms of create a brilliant product at a good price point and a brand around it that means, you know, we can reach the consumers we want just through delivery.
And delivery, coming back to an earlier point we made, I'm assuming gives rise to a Burgerism model, and there is the Domino's model, and there is this model, and there is that model. And that then leads into what you were saying before, that it's incredibly dynamic and we don't know where it's going to go, or do we?
There's no one model and, you know, things are quickly changing. That's one of the reasons that, you know, again, we have people working closely with these restaurants. And I mean, you know, just to give you another example, is one thing that became pretty apparent as delivery grew is that, you know, the restaurants wanted more ways to reach certain segments of the market, more targeted channels, more efficient channels. That type of insight is part of the reason we built an advertising platform where restaurants can get very targeted at reaching certain consumers in our app, but also, for instance, can advertise in the Rides app to certain types of consumers on Uber that are going from, you know, one place to another in a highly targeted way. And it's just kind of another example where restaurants are focused on, you know, making brilliant food, partnering with us, and ultimately reaching new customers in a very different way than just the traditional model of restaurants coming into the restaurant.
And your relationship with the rides part of Uber, from what you're saying, is, I would say it's fundamental, but it's very important. And it gives you a lot of real benefits that your competitors in some countries, and I would include all European countries, they don't have that because they are just a single product, if you like, single service model. We do restaurant delivery. If you go into the Far East, there are more e-commerce platforms who embed delivery within what they do. But in the US, in Europe, I guess in South America as well, though the business model is we do restaurant delivery. Out of all of those companies, you also have this sister business, and you can feed off each other. So that gives you a very useful competitive advantage in terms of understanding, in terms of data, and in terms of opportunities, I guess.
I think you just did a brilliant job, Peter, of explaining what we call the power of the platform. It is fundamental, and it's proving to be highly differentiating. We talked earlier about Uber One. We can only do that with discounts and food on and rides because we have, you know, two sister businesses. And if you go back to what I talked about in terms of having the best technology and the best team, in part, we can do that because of the same reason. You know, we can leverage technology between the two business and the technological excellence of the rides business. And it's a brilliant proposition for people to join Uber, having an opportunity like I have to work across both Eats and rides and not just do so in one country, do so globally.
Yeah. Yes. And you've made the personal point. It's been interesting, beneficial to you and no doubt loads of your colleagues to cross over like that. So the personal angle becomes important, and that leads us right back to what John was saying at the very beginning, that the industry that we're in is all about people. It's important for everybody in the industry to recognize that despite the technology, despite all the issues around delivery only kitchens and so on, at heart it's all about people. I mean, that's just an observation. I don't have a question on the back of it.
It is, Peter, but it's also about data, and that word comes up a lot, doesn't it? Data is, you can share across the platform data. So your rides business and your food business, what a great pool of data that brings. And that's where the restaurateurs are so desperate and keen to tap into more. And I know what you were saying, Matt, about the different platforms, additional initiatives. And you'll never tell them that Mr. Smith from Clapham ordered a cheeseburger and fries, because you won't. That's just not the business. You won't share that data, which is what some of them are asking. But at the same time, it comes back to the personal touch and the power that Uber has with that data. Would you agree with that?
I mean, I'm still stuck on the point Peter made around people. At the end of the day, you know, when people ask me kind of, you know, what gets me excited about what I do, it is the people. I'll tell you, like, the UK restaurant landscape is so vibrant and so diverse, in part because of the brilliant people that work in this space. I'll say also for us, it's about the restaurateurs and the entrepreneurs. It's also about the couriers that are working really hard and putting so much care and diligence into getting the food to the end consumer. I do think it's people that make this business, and it's the reason I get so excited to do what I do.
Yes, I've written about the DNA of the restaurant business being people. And if you're not a people person, you can't work in it either. So that's all hugely important. I think we're probably beginning to see the finish line for this podcast, but we call ourselves the Delivery Prophets. That means that we should be looking to the future. I just wonder whether you've got any views, Matt, on what the future might look like, or one or two things that the future might hold in this delivery space.
Yeah, happy to share a bit. I mean, one thing that I haven't said so far is, if you talk to restaurants, you know, 80% of them will say the platforms like ours are a huge contributor to their financial health. They're more profitable with us than without. And as I said earlier, it's really easy to get started. Really easy to get started, very low cost, very low risk. But the restaurants that are really maximizing the profitable growth of delivery, I think, are the ones that are, you know, really being thoughtful about how to embrace this channel and getting increasingly sophisticated. And I mentioned some things earlier in terms of what they're doing, from, you know, curating menus, really thoughtful about their marketing, really thoughtful about their packaging, working with us to make sure it is a seamless end-to-end delivery. And that very much is the core of what more and more restaurants need to and will be leaning into the future, because that's ultimately what delivers the customer experience that keeps the customers coming back. There are lots of other innovations in the broader ecosystem that will make their way into delivery over time. Different brands with volume are trialing lockers to improve courier pickup. Lots of restaurants are totally thinking about how they retrofit their space to make it a more seamless courier pickup. You'll read in the press, there's lots of discussion around robots and drones and different ways of bringing down the cost of delivery, making it faster. That's all stuff that we're looking at, that we're partnering with players in that space. And there's a lot we don't know. But at the same time, I think that's true of any game-changing sector that's truly changing how people live and how businesses grow. And I think it's one of the things that keeps this space really exciting. I always say we only succeed when restaurants succeed. And I will say to any restaurants that are listening to us, reach out. We're excited to partner. We're excited to think differently with you about how to build for you. Let's do it together.
So the future is going to be different, which is exciting. And the longer we hang around, the longer, the more change we're going to see in the future. So I think it's really great. Thank you.
It's so fast evolving, Peter, isn't it? You know, since we started this, 14 episodes ago now, 15 episodes, what has changed so much in that time alone? And having Matt here today with the insights that he's actually given around what Uber are doing, how Uber are actually partnering with restaurants is really insightful. It's great to have someone on from the platform where we can see the other side of it.
Yes.
So that is really insightful for the listeners. So, Matt, thank you for that.
Fine. So just before we wrap up, Matt, your opportunity to raise anything that you think is important that we haven't. It's not a suggestion that you should raise something, but is there something that's burning that you want to mention?
I think you have both covered a lot of ground, and I assume you kind of take from a lot of what we talked about that there is no one size fits all way to do this, and that's why, as you rightly just said, John, partnership is so important in this space.
So that's great. So a big thank you to our fantastic guest Matt Price for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today. So Matt, thank you very much. And here's a reminder that whether you're a delivery company, a marketplace app, a technology company, a restaurant owner, an investor, or simply someone who loves to order takeout, the Delivery Profits is the perfect way to stay informed and ahead of the curve in the world of food delivery. You'll find the Delivery Profits on Spotify, Apple, or on the other places where you normally get your podcasts. And please support the show by leaving your 5-star rating. Those ratings are important and help more people discover our content. And there's more at www.thedeliverywork.world/thedeliveryprofits. Tune in to the next edition of The Delivery Profits for the insights, interviews, and analysis that will keep you ahead of the game in this exciting and ever-evolving industry. And with that, it's goodbye from today's Delivery Profits. That's Matt and John and me. Goodbye.